He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And to start out this week's show, I think the big news that anybody who's contemplating buying a car, new or used, is going to, in some cases, have a very hard time getting what they actually might think they wanted. Vehicle shortages are increasing by the week or the month, if not the week. Prices are being revised on a lot of cases. And now the general public has to compete with a big corporate competitor for vehicles, and that is the rental car companies, who before the pandemic hit and before people started wanting to rent cars again, were shedding themselves of larger inventories. Hertz was really hit, and they went into bankruptcy and were selling their vehicles to the public or anybody who'd buy them. Now they are almost trying to buy vehicles from anybody they can buy them from, probably except from private buyers. But there's a big article in this week's edition of my guru periodical, The Automotive News, where it is a big competition in the rental companies out there trying to increase their fleets because people are starting to travel again. And when they land in an airport in a big city, they're going to go, the first place they're going to go to after their baggage or even before their baggage, you know, collection is a rental car place. And there are apparently very slim inventories of rental vehicles in some parts of the country. And I know in one country, I think they were renting, there were rentals of U-Haul vehicles instead of passenger car vehicles because they had none in the particular country I was reading about. Jamie, remember that story?
No, but I can confirm. I know people who've tried renting cars recently. One friend was at Orlando Airport, and the line was ridiculously long.
And I'd like to know what he was going to have to. She was going to have to pay for that rental because I think prices are soaring.
They are.
I mean, it makes you want to drive your own vehicle instead of go get a rental car. But if you're flying across the country, you're not going to drive across because you don't have the time to do it. That's that on that front. But I've noticed that some dealers' lots are shrinking in numbers of vehicles that I pass by in a semi-regularly fashion. Inventories are not being replenished because of this chip shortage and capacity problem of building vehicles with the numbers of chips that they have to put in them where they're putting the chips in. So that's on that front. Then we have the gas shortage from this pipeline fiasco of last week. And while the pipeline has started again and is supposedly pumping millions of gallons an hour through this pipeline, which I understand travels at only 5 miles per hour, so I read that in an article, there's still shortages all over the place, including Washington, D.C., and points further south. Mercifully, around here, between here and Massachusetts, where I had been over the weekend, gas is not a problem to find at any place I saw. And there were no lines of panic buying. Interestingly enough, where we are seeing in the Northwest Connecticut corner and all over Connecticut, regular gas at between 305 and up at stations and premium a lot higher. Over in Massachusetts this weekend, I got gas at $2.69 a gallon for regular, and the price for premium was $2.89. That is less than our regular grade gas. And there was no panic buying, no shortage, and it was amazing to see the price differential in Massachusetts, in eastern Massachusetts versus northwestern Connecticut. But I think gas will stabilize, maybe, and certainly inventories will get better down south. But I'm sure not glad that we're not living between, let's say, Washington, D.C. and Florida.
My hunch is that gas prices are going to be high through the summer. I mean, they typically are, and this year will be even more so than usual, just because, I mean, I was on the roads this weekend as well. I went to New York several times, and the roads were insanely busy. The traffic was crazy. rest areas were jam-packed. You know, people are out and about, and understandably so. And there are still short. I mean, there's not only shortages due to the pipeline, but as I mentioned last week or the week before, I cannot remember, distribution of gas to gas stations is still a little bit iffy with a shortage of drivers across the country. So it's going to be interesting. And people are going to be happy driving their electric cars, those of them who have them.
They are, and that is a good point to I was going to segue into that, because this may be the biggest boon for hybrids and gas car sales, electric car sales, that they will see. And it may really tilt the public's interest in electric cars from one of concern about range anxiety and that kind of thing to, we ought to get this so we don't have a gas shortage problem. So good for the electric car industry, possibly. Before we turn this over to Jay, because I know he's got a list, I want to go through, update my Carvana purchase experience, which I think we discussed a bit last week. I've now had my Carvana vehicle, Jeep Cherokee, for 2.5 weeks, I guess. The vehicle itself is sensational. I am going through a couple of Carvana service issues with, not service issues, but condition issues with the vehicle, which will be remedied in an appointment that will take place in the next 3 to 4 weeks, I suppose, when the parts come in. Of course, with shortages, we have shortages in lots of areas in the automobile industry besides chips. Parts shortages are also there. And I'm going to be getting a new windshield, for example, and a new cup holder or center console cover, because both had defects in them, which Carvana is not even questioning their willingness to replace. But the vehicle itself is like all my other Cherokees, and this will be the fourth Cherokee I will either have been leasing or owning. It's been wonderful. I took it on I've got over 1,200 miles on the vehicle since I collected it, and the average miles per gallon, for example, is 31.2. And that is including quite a lot of highway driving and some in-town around driving, so that's an exceptional miles per gallon capability of this particular model. The ones that do this are the Turbo 4 engines, for those who are Cherokee-wise, but you can't find any Cherokee turbos around. In used or in new dealers' lots in this corner, they may be available, but they aren't in this corner. In at least half a dozen Jeep dealerships, I've cruised through to see whether I could have supplanted my Carvana Turbo Jeep Find with a pre-owned used Cherokee. They're all V6 engines. On that note, Jay, your list is ready to go.
Well, on that note, like I said, traffic is crazy. Yes, cars are hard to come about. I have friends, young couple, looking for a relatively newish, smallish SUV. And I went back to my favorite, which is the Mazda CX-5. And Mazda has a pretty good CPO, Certified Pre-Owned Program. And even in this in these times where used cars are horrendously expensive as well, you can find a 2018, 2019 Mazda CX-5 with less than 20,000 miles for around right around $20,000, $21,000, which is a pretty darn good deal.
That is.
On the other hand, and just as an anecdote, and Robin, I'm sure you saw this as well. Speaking of crazy expensive, overpriced cars, there is a dealer in Montana selling Kia Tellurides for $80,000, which is $15,000 to $18,000 over MSRP.
Oh, you know, it's like $30,000 over MSRP.
No, this was a top of the line. So the Telluride, you can get a new Telluride, or you could, somewhere around $40,000, basically equipped, you know, a pretty base model, but with all-wheel drive you know, decently equipped. I mean, no cars come with roll-up windows anymore, right?
Right.
But this one was probably a $60,000 vehicle and 60 plus, and they were trying to get, I think, just
well, there's
just
something called a black edition, and that's probably what you're talking about. Because...
But Kelley Blue Book did do a study, and it seems that the consumers are willing to pay up to 12% above MSRP to buy a new car now. Now, to be honest, I cannot. I just don't get it. I mean, if you're looking for a new car, surely yours is not falling apart, and I would just, you know, keep driving your car for a few more months or a year.
But to that point, I've got to say that the prices are going up regardless of whether they're MSRPs or whether they are dealer add-ons, mainly because parts costs are going up, and that's what's coming out of this whole shortage situation.
Yep.
And I just they're also increased by sleight-of-hand accessory price increases without the base prices being increased. For example, last year, actually before last year, in 2019, after some early Jeep Cherokees came out, later models came out $295 more expensive, and that $295 was because every paint color other than, I guess, white and maybe not metallic black, which were standard or available as no-cost options, were priced at $295 if you wanted red, blue, whatever other colors they were available in. And so when you look at a sticker on vehicles, as I do over time, and you see this way of getting a higher price, I can't believe that blue paint or red paint costs more to apply than white or black. But this is how the manufacturers, this isn't just a Jeep thing. This is, I know Audi has color price, option colors priced higher. In some cases, I think $1,000 on some of their vehicles. And other manufacturers are going to do this kind of thing, too. But the chips are going up in price. And while the luxury versions of the vehicles we talk about, like Jay says in the Telluride, those lines of vehicles which have higher prices because of the content of the vehicles and the level of equipment they've got on them, they can absorb some of these component increases for a while at any rate. But at the base level, VW's ID4 is in the news about selling it below what it's costing to make it because of the battery costs and the low volume that they're at so far in deliveries when they try to figure out how they're going to ultimately profit on a line of cars. As we know, I think, Jay, Tesla probably sold many of its early vehicles at a loss until they could ramp up capacity to get enough volume to bring the cost per vehicle down to where now they're making a profit. But anyways, for the retail person listening to this show who might want to go out and buy a car, it's going to be interesting for you all to go get exactly what you want. Pickup trucks are good in short supply. For example, in some manufacturers' lots, and we know pickup trucks are very popular with contractors around here, and many of them like to have the newest, if not the most expensive versions of them, but they like to have the newest ones on. So, as Jay says, it may be wise to hold on to your vehicles longer. The good news is that you're going to get a better trade-in value, too. And I'm not sure that I didn't achieve my Carvana purchase at a price which I could no longer find for the equivalent vehicle if it was on a dealer lot somewhere. But well, I will never know. I'm very happy with the Carvana purchase.
Actually. All right, then that is we are happy because when you have good karma, it's always good for the rest of us. Jay, your list.
My list. Well, Stellantis Group. You know what used to be Fiat Chrysler. This is news from about a week or two ago, actually. Carlos Tavares, who's the Portuguese CEO of the newly formed group, which is now the fourth biggest manufacturer in the world, has made an announcement and a commitment to keep all of the company's brands alive for 10 years. And he's giving he's assigning or they're naming new CEOs or existing CEOs to run each brand, and giving those brands a chance, and they're going to give them the technology they need to develop the brands, and they're just going to finance them and give them a 10-year plan. And this is interesting because Chrysler and Dodge might just have a lifeline. Dodge has a few models that are highly successful, although riding on platforms that are totally outdated. You know, the Dodge Chargers
Durango.
And...
the Durangos.
Well, they're sedans. Yeah, and then there's the Durango. And Chrysler has just that minivan and a Pacifica, I believe.
Yeah, the Chrysler Pacifica, right, plus the Dodge
version. And it's... I mean, I feel terrible saying that because it sounds like I kind of forgot it existed, and people do, and it's a great vehicle. And the Chrysler 300, which is a really old platform. So those two brands have a lifeline. I this is just a personal hunch. I think we will not see Peugeot ever getting on into this market, not in the next 10 years. But I would not
stay
be
away.
Surprised to see some of their platforms and even some of their models rebadged as Chrysler products, for instance. But that's just a hunch on my part.
It may be a very good one. I don't think they should try to come back in. I'm not even sure.
They won't. I don't think that's an option.
I agree.
What else? I hate to, but we do every week talk about Tesla. People ask me again, what should I buy for a new vehicle? And well, I want a medium-sized SUV. I'm willing, you know, we're talking $40,000, $50,000 budget, you know, Q5. Well, why not? Why aren't we all buying a Tesla Y in that case? And we circle back to that, and you know, it's sad to say, but it seems to be the best option out there.
Well,
and we talked about colors. Tesla has that expensive red. They have a very limited number of colors available. I think the white, which is the only color you don't pay extra for. Then you have a dark gray, a very nice
attractive,
dark blue.
By the way. Even if
what's that?
Very attractive dark gray if you have to. Even
yep,
if you have
dark
to pay
gray, dark blue, black.
Whatever it is, they charge.
And then there's that special metallic red that's actually quite nice. But you do stand out in the crowd with that. And it is, you're paying extra money.
Well, one more thing about Tesla before, Jay, you go to other things, is Tesla is now number 4 luxury brand in terms of U.S. registrations, according to new vehicle registration data from Experian. And that's quite an achievement, I would say.
Well, and then it's also their Model S sedan that's coming out next year is also going to be one of the fastest sports cars on the planet at any price, which is kind of, again, it's sad to see that, you know, high-performance cars like Ferraris, Porsches, Lamborghinis are going to be outrun by a 1,100 horsepower Model S that will cost less than those supercars.
Yeah, but, you know, I think a very, very small percentage of people are going to actually buy a car for the sole reason of it having the fastest 0 to 60 or 0 to 100 time. I think the unique visuals of these other brands' cars are going to be more and more interesting to people because as we look at the Teslas and many of the impending competing brands that are going to try to compete with the Model S level, their body shapes are all quite similar. You get to the VW ID4, however, and it's very unique. It's unique, and the Audis and probably more of the other cars. Ferrari and Aston Martin are going to have electric versions of their cars, as is Rolls-Royce going to be an electric, and they have unique body styles too. But I do say that overall, I find the whole Tesla lineup, Model 3, the Model Y being an exception, mostly very visually appealing, even if it's becoming, you know, very similar between the 3 and the S and a couple of the other versions that are coming out.
All right, we've got 4 minutes left, and we're going to do safety tips. And
let's get into the safety of carrying gasoline or fossil fuels. apparently, in some states in the south of this country and over the border, there have been pictures or stories about people getting gasoline in, I guess, plastic bags and styrofoam containers. Jay, you want to carry on with that, please?
Because,
well, it's
stupid.
Obviously it's not very smart. Not only is it a risk when you're transporting it, but as someone mentioned, you know, how do you pour it into your gas tank when you actually do need it, if you ever get to do that? But, you know, it's funny, but it's not. And also we're getting into spring and summer where a lot of people have, you know, lawnmowers, recreational vehicles. So we do transport gasoline in our vehicles. And, you know, it just has to be done as safely as possible. And you know, you want to have appropriate containers. You want them to be sealed. And I know I'm always very careful when I'm transporting gasoline in a vehicle, and I really don't go very far. I do have a friend who back in the 90s or early 2000s, pre-9/11, would transport racing fuel in the bed of his pickup truck from New Jersey to Long Island, and I don't think that was necessarily particularly smart.
In anything, or just in the just loose in the bed?
Just 55-gallon drums in the bed, as many as he could put in the bed of a
In drums. You know, because the thing about this picture, and I don't want to belabor it for Robin's sake, but this is just people who apparently have never seen a gas can in their life.
No, they may not have access to a gas can. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid mowing lawns, I actually collected gas from a gas station in glass gallon jugs.
But that's still better
No, you don't do that anymore. It's illegal, I believe. But to that end, you'd also don't want to transport gasoline in a container that is in the bright sunlight if you've been in the back of a hatchback of a vehicle, because gas expands, vapors expand, and you certainly don't want to have a problem with a high pressure and even a sealed plastic jug. Or if you unscrew the cap to let it in, you've got to watch out because you could get sprayed depending on how much you fill those jugs, those containers. With that, I end that point.
All right. Jay, anything else you want to?
No, just lots of traffic on the roads. Keep your eyes peeled, as usual.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.